extra special, extra wonderful, near replicant edition of Normandy FM. Folks, it's been a while. I'm Eric Van Allen, one of your co-hosts, alongside Kenneth Shepherd. Ken, how you doing?
I'm good. The game finally got gay. We are so back.
I have been trying to keep that such a tight secret for so long because I wanted it to be just like a happy little revelation for you amidst all the revelations that will take place, honestly, over the course of the next like three or four episodes. We're going to be a lot of revelations coming up pretty soon here, but this was a special one just for you. As a reminder, we are Normandy FM. We are a book club, game club style podcast, and we do retrospectives of various games. We started with Mass Effect and moved on to a bunch of other stuff, and now we're here at Near Replicant. We are covering, because our schedule has been kind of funky and also the way we have had to play these has been kind of funky, we're doing the first, like the very first part of Facade. Because of the way that progression happened in this game for Ken, he ended up needing to do the first part of Facade before he could go do the Law of Robotics, and so we are doing like the first, I would say like third of Facade's story, and then the second part of the Law of Robotics, and then the Forest of Myth. I know it's a bit goofy, but it we are following Ken's playthrough, and that is what has happened.
And so, what is it just different when I play? Like, what? I don't understand.
So as best I can tell from my own time playing this and from doing research, because after you had this happen, I've spent like the last couple days like watching other people's long plays and let's plays of Near Replicant, trying to figure out what went wrong, because I kind of like planned this season out according to how Replicant has always unfolded for me. But apparently it does not unfold the same way for everyone. In fact, this entire what you would call the like time skip arc can unfold differently depending on how you do things, or really like you can try to approach any of the shards in any order with some exceptions. So I think you can't do the missing ferryman right away. I think that has to be one that you do later, and obviously the Law of Robotics, as we will cover in this episode, has to be broken into two parts with a gap in between them. So those aside, you can kind of tackle some of the other stuff in whatever order you decide to do. So Facade and the Airy, which we have not gotten to yet, the Forest of Myth, that stuff can kind of be tackled in a more nebulous order. And so I think we just kind of got a weird lining up of whatever flags fired within this game to make it fire this way. But we can adapt. We're flexible here. Before we get underway with our talking, as always, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/normdfm, where you can go and back us and support us. Any amount helps keep the lights on and cover some of our hosting costs and all that. We think of it like a tip jar. And if you back at the highest tier, you do get your name shouted out every episode. And I decided to do that at the beginning of the episode last week because I thought that would be fun. So shout outs to John Warren, Andrea Sheeran, Joshua Jarvis, Seth Pitts, Darius Pippins, Shane Erickson, Cypress Catwell, and Christoph Ice for your support. Thank you so much. Folks, Near Replicant. Ken, before we get underway, we've talked a little bit about this. I want to make sure we caught it on the pod so we kind of got some feelings on record, as it were. How have you felt about Near Replicant up to this point? And especially, like, I know it's been a little bit difficult because we've kind of had to start and stop so frequently. So how are you feeling about the game where we are at right now?
I think I'm maybe getting a better sense of what the game is trying to talk about, and I think, especially in this episode, I maybe got a better sense of maybe issues that I'm having in terms of like Near's writing, which we talked about in the last episode. I think it's very much, I'm getting the sense that this game is very much about the vibe of what it's trying to convey more so than the nitty gritty of it, which makes it kind of difficult for this show specifically when we are like basically combing through every single section, and that's just the nature of how the show is structured. Because I definitely think I got a better sense of what this, I guess, act of the game is kind of about in these, and how certain other characters' arcs are going to mirror Near's, and maybe getting a sense that I think it is maybe ineloquent in how it conveys some of those things sometimes. But maybe just, I guess I'm just like more open to approaching it on those terms. I do think I still think, in spite of, you know, there were some instances early on in the time skip where I think the combat was starting to click with me a little bit more. A lot of that is kind of gone out the window because it kind of seems to have fallen back into the same rhythm that it was in before. But at the very least, I feel like I'm not moving in blindly trying to figure out what the game is actually trying to say. Even if the fact that Nier is like 1,000 years old, is nobody's going to acknowledge that, and that still keeps me up at night.
It's going to bother you forever. It's going to torture you for
ages. He suddenly aged at this point, and nobody seems to really think that that's weird, even though he didn't do it for like 1,000 years.
Your sister being kidnapped really does do a number on mm-hmm. you, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels weird because it feels like, in some ways, we talk a lot about Nier, and I have to be very abstract because, obviously, much like Nier Automata, but I think, honestly, in my opinion, even more so than Nier Automata, Nier Replicant is a game about its revelations and how they shape things when you view those events. And so I'm trying to maintain a lot of that surprise and mystery for you, because even just little things like finding out Emile's origins, you know, learning where Emile comes from, why Emile is the way he is, and some of his backstory around his family and why he feels like an outcast and all that, I do think is really important for feeling that in the moment, rather than like going in with a preconceived notion of what that moment is going to be like. And so I'm holding back a lot, but I do think it's interesting to come back and have those moments where I'm kind of myself, I'm refreshing, you know, right before we got on this pod, I'm refreshing myself on everything that's happened up to this point from your playthrough and from what you have seen so far. And having to even remind myself, okay, what has Ken seen, what hasn't Ken seen, and also how long it's been since certain events, which when I was playing Nier Replicant happened mere hours before, things like the Shadow Lord fight and him taking Yona and leaving and Kaine getting frozen on the door and then freeing Kaine later. All those things happen in very rapid succession when you're playing them at home, but here, I find it interesting that in some cases we do have these moments of a lot of space, a lot of openness to have these thoughts kind of linger where they might not otherwise. So I do have a few questions before we get started, because this is the part of our playthrough where I'm going to start poking and prodding. And this is not me trying to trivia question you. This is me trying to kind of gauge where your head's at with the world of Nier Replicant as we move into what is going to be kind of some endgame type stuff. What do you think Nier Replicant is about right now?
I think, as far as like this act right now, it feels very much about how these characters are dealing with some sort of like revenge-driven obsession. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll talk about, you know, the King of Assad at some point. We'll talk about Gideon at the Junk Heap. But also, like, that all kind of filters back into Nier specifically. It's also, they're trying to paint him as, you know, he has this bloodlust almost to fight Shades. And I definitely felt like when they brought that up, or when Vice said that when we were in Popola's office at one point, it felt very much like cart before the horse. Because, like, if that was the theme that they were trying to really capitalize on here, it definitely felt like that was coming before I'd seen Nier, like, even act in any way that felt over the top or out of line. And I still don't really think that they have shown him do anything that feels destructive yet. I mean, like, certainly, like, he says things that are crass. And then, in the midst of all this, they're starting to try and humanize, for lack of a better term, the Shades as, like, an entity, because for the longest time in this game, they were treated as this sort of mindless trove of monsters, and now they... I mean, like, the average Shade that we fight is still kind of portrayed that way, but, you know, you get in these boss encounters that have some actual story going on and some sort of emotion that is tied to their actions, which has been... Yeah, again, like, When I said earlier, I feel like Nier is maybe ineloquent in how it tries to convey these things. I think it has a lot of maybe narrative structure issues in terms of how it introduces things and how it expects me to be on the same page with it without it really doing a lot of that work, which I think if Vice getting on this high horse and being like, you're getting kind of nasty with how much you want to kill Shades right now. Like, if he had said that maybe after everything we've seen now, maybe that would have felt more earned as like a theme at that point. Because at the time, it was just kind of, it almost felt like backfilling of something that they were trying, that they were going to get to later. Mm. But yeah, that is my general feeling on like the current theme of the game at the moment. We basically just play in the hits at this point. We've gone back to the last of part two.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'm curious about, because it's hard to like get a gauge on this without tipping the bean can, so to speak. But have you kind of dug into the thoughts about like the world and the lore at large? I know we've talked a little bit about some of the loading screens that are now appearing. Definitely change in tone, obviously change in presentation and format during certain sections of the game. Have you spent much time digging into any of the additional information, I guess, in this game? Or are you finding that you're driven more by the A-plot?
I'm definitely, like, just by the nature of this show, it's been, and, you know, in retrospect, maybe we should have put in an episode to talk about side quests specifically, because I think I need to dedicate that time to that. Because largely right now,
we'll get to that when we get to that, because I think you're going to get to that when you need to start. I've already told you that mm-hmm. the way this game handles some of its endings are that you need all of the weapons in the game to get that ending. And that was a carryover from Yokotaro's previous game, Drakengard. And it's kind of a silly requirement, in my opinion. It's maybe one of my least favorite things about Nier Replicant as a game. And it's something they got rid of going into Nier Automata, obviously. And I think it was for the better. Mm-hmm. But I do think what it does do is it forces you to engage with some of the side content you might not otherwise. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. I will straight up say some of the side quests in this game are bad because they're just like, go kill sheep and get gold for it. So I will say we'll get to that stuff when we get to that stuff, and we don't need to worry about like sequestering an episode for it, because I would like it to happen a little bit more organically if possible. And for you to kind of have the experience of, okay, you have to go earn gold in this world. How are you going to do it? And then discovering things along the way. I think that is a more useful for our purposes way of approaching that than me like sitting here. And it's not like Cyberpunk where I can more easily just say like, okay, do this one, and this one. And these are like the big ones. And here's when you should do them. I mean, granted, some of them are just gone now. Some of them were part of the pre-time skip and are just not functionally accessible anymore. Other ones, it's not going to prevent your progression at all. But other ones, it's like, I think I'd be more interested in hearing your response to some of them, because I don't know that any of them are particularly crucial for understanding Nier Replicant as a work, but they are on a whole important, if that makes sense. Like, as a group, they are part of the puzzle, and they do provide some interesting insight in different ways depending on how you find them, where you find them, how you stumble into things. So it's interesting. I think we're getting into some real meat here, and so I'm really excited to talk about this episode, because I mean, starting right away with Facade, I mean, like you said, Nier's kind of getting a little bloodlusty. He's getting a little too into killing Shades, you know? It's like, we get it. We get it, Nier. You kill Shades. That's what you like to do. It's a little much. Your brand's bad right now. But we get down to Facade, and we're back here. We're hanging out in good old Rules Kingdom of Facade, and the king wants to talk to us. And I really do like, there's something about Facade that feels different from most of the other towns. It feels a bit more unified, I guess. I guess the other comparison point I do have here would be the Eri, but like each town kind of has its own distinct vibe, but Facade is the one I always associate with. I get to interact with NPCs and actually like talk to people, because the Eri is obviously very shut off, very closed. The seaport feels very lively, but I honestly don't recall doing a lot of NPC talking in that town. Nier's Village is obviously one thing, but it's a very different place post-time skip versus pre-time skip. So, like, Facade coming back here almost felt a little bit warm in a way. Mm. You get to have this moment where you're kind of, like, talking to the king.
And you get a warm learning welcome. About,
yeah, you get a warm welcome. It's like a happy time here. It's, like, almost a weird contrast to everything that we've seen in the post-time skip Nier world up to this point, where a lot of it has been very doom and gloom and things breaking and falling apart and deteriorating, and here we have Facade that seems to be on the upswing. They're doing well. My god, what could happen? But we meet the king. He's about to get hitched, and it turns out the Fira from pre-time skip is here, and she is the bride to be, and she was going to apparently not even host the wedding if our party or our band of adventurers didn't show up. And it's really lovely. We get to reintroduce Emile here. I guess Emile wasn't here the first time we went to Facade.
No.
It was just Kaine and Nier and Vice. So this is a real introduction for Emile. Kaine finally hangs out in the city, which is nice. Vice, there's rules for when you can run hot water. I really find some of these dialogues here between Nier, Vice, Kaine, and Emile really effective. Like, what parts stuck out to you here, Ken, as far as, like, them kind of just talking and hanging out in Facade as, you know, on the eve of this big wedding and all the festivities?
The main thing that, well, initially, stuck out to me was Kaine being like, oh, should I even be here? Like, I feel like this is supposed to be a festive occasion, and I'm just, like, a downer just by being here. And, like, I don't know how many times that girl can be told. She's just like me, for real. Like, how many times can somebody tell you that they want you there before you actually believe them? That was definitely part of, like, the vibe there. Because, like, everyone else is, you know, treating it as the happy occasion that it is. And then Kaine just, like, inherently believes herself to be antithetical to that, which is... that's very much along the lines of what we've seen and heard so far, but, like, girl, we broke a spell to get you out from a fucking petrification. Like, what more do we have to do to make you understand that we want you here? Then there was, of course, the conversation with Emile, which I'm surprised that both... Okay, like, you said that you were trying to keep the secret from me. I'm surprised that I went this long without knowing Emile is apparently a flaming homosexual like myself.
Mm-hmm. A confirmed canonical by Yoko Taro homosexual character.
Although I was talking to a friend of the show, Julie Muncy, and she was telling me that, like, that was maybe less explicit at one point in maybe the original game.
In the original game, the statement that, and I'm going just off of wiki information at this point, but in the original version of the game, Emile states that he wishes to get married someday after watching Fira's wedding. In the 2010 game, he says he'd like to get married if he can, quote, find a girl who doesn't mind what I look like, end quote. However, in this version, the version 1.224, the remaster, Emile explicitly mentions that he's jealous of Fira. And when Nier makes a comment about how someday Emile will find a bride to be with, Emile is like, huh? Oh, right. A ... bride. Also, but like the reason why this is like, it's straight up, it's legit, is like it was confirmed by Yoko Taro in an interview in 2011. So like after original Nier came out, Yoko Taro confirmed this, and also the book Grimoire Nier, confirms that Emile is gay and has feelings for Nier. And so the change in Nier Replicant is largely seen as like them going and being like, okay, we're going to make this like blatantly obvious. Like we're going to make this incredibly clear. But yeah, no, it is fully confirmed. I do think it's interesting because it's obviously it's not like a major facet of the story up to this point, because we have not even really talked about the concepts of romance or love, really. Like it's come up in side quests, but for the main characters, they have largely not broached the topic of like, they've certainly, you know, like Vice calls Kaine a hussy and stuff like that, and obviously like language that's coded in a way that implies they I always think of Xenoblade Chronicles 3 because, famously, Xenoblade Chronicles 3, the main characters don't know what sex is. Literally, canonically, do not know what sex is. So they don't say the word fuck because that word doesn't exist for them. They don't have a context or understanding of the word fuck, even though they say other curse words all the time. They don't say that one. I think that's a very interesting, deliberate choice. And so I find it here interesting that Vice, at least, obviously knows certain words and uses them against Kaine for her appearance and the way she presents. But largely, these characters have not really talked about romantic preferences, dating, love. I mean, largely have not had opportunities to do so either. Emile's been locked up in a mansion for years, and Kaine's been an outcast. Nier is just taking care of his sister for 1,000 years or whatever. I find it really interesting to have it happen here, because, like, for me, what this scene does is it really... I know we've talked about it a million times. I've said this a million times, but, like, again, I'm reminded of how much this is a party, a, like, group of people that has bonded together. And I feel that in this moment here in Facade, where they're just talking to each other, like, opening up a little bit, being honest, like, commenting on things and revealing pieces of themselves in the process that feels so genuine and so warm. Like, this is a warm scene to me. And I really love it. It's like a standout part of Nier Replicant for me because of, like, when these characters actually do sit and talk to each other and open themselves up like this, it's always very profound and very memorable. I think the Kaine and Emile scene from Pre-Time Skip is another piece of that. And also when they bring Kaine back and unfreeze her from the door and all that, like, these moments where the party is together really hit for me. So yeah,
I didn't realize the feelings for Nier specifically, because I mean, it's not obviously not said in this game, but as I was thinking about it, I was like, I don't know who else Emile would have feelings for, like just considering the characters that I've seen him interact with. So I guess that is where those feelings would be attached to, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's... It's kind of, you know, it's what Emile's got, if anything else. But I do find, like... I'm trying to figure out how I want to phrase this. Emile as a character is very, like... He's very naive in a lot of ways. And so I almost kind of like the idea that he has maybe, like, as he started to consider, like, do I like people? How do I like people? What people do I like? That he has found an admiration and even a romantic admiration for Nier in the process of all this. It almost kind of, like, offsets some of the, what we were talking about coming in with, like, Vice as being like, Nier, you're getting a little too into Killing the Shades, man. It's like, your brand's getting weird. It makes me wonder what Emile sees in Nier, and that makes Nier a more rounded character by, you know, through that lens for me. Because I do think that a lot of what happens in post-Time Skip, as we view Nier as a person, we're having to view a changed person that has changed in time that we have not seen him. And so I find it really fascinating to try and understand this character, because we have to understand them through the lens of other characters a lot of the time. We do get some Nier development here. I'd say we get more Nier development further in parts we have not gotten to yet. But I do find that learning more about how other characters view Nier helps me gain a better understanding of Nier as a character and how he has changed, how he operates, that we don't always get when we're playing as the player character, because we're a little bit more involved. We're almost first person with Nier. So yeah.
That does make me want to go back and just, like, re-examine some scenes of, in terms of, like, their interactions. Okay.
There's also an element of, I love thinking about this with any RPG, is that I feel like there's an assumed level of the things you are doing are shortened in time, if that makes sense. Like I feel every RPG has to grapple with this, because you can't realistically have a video game that lasts for, like, years at a time and make you feel all those years at a time. So even a game like Final Fantasy X, where I don't think there's any canonical statement about how long it takes for this group to get from point A to point B, right? But you kind of assume that their journey from even just, like, let's say Besaid to Lucca probably takes longer than the, like, couple of hours it does for us as players. And so how games kind of grapple with that time dilation is always interesting. Role-playing games, I think, have to particularly grapple with this, because unless you are taking a more literal approach to how much time there is that you are showing this journey, even when you have games where you stop at inns and rest for the night and stuff like that, it can still, like, if you tried to literally count those days, it would be like a week at most versus like, how do you map the time out? We've only had really like two firm time descriptors in this game.
And they don't make any fucking sense.
And they make no sense, yeah. So there's kind of an understood time dilation that's happening here, and it almost like allows the player to start to fill in the gaps of like what they think the journey has been like, how these characters have grown together in times where you did not see them, or maybe just in the little moments that, you know, maybe your journey from Devila and Popola's village to the Junk Heap took, you know, a minute, but in reality it might have taken them much more time to get there, and what would they have talked about, what would they have experienced in the time there. So anyways, I bring all that up to say that our party has just grown closer and we love it. We talk with the king and he says he feels guilty for making a festival out of his wedding, and so as we've been pointing out, you know, you got to blow off some steam sometimes and it'll make Fira happy, and really that's what it's about. You have a good quote here: sometimes life is better when you have something to fight for. That's not written in the rules, but perhaps it should be something to fight for. And we even have more rule stuff as we get to the wedding and everyone's dancing and chanting. And per rule 904, they must seal the union with a kiss. It's a very, very just festive scene. It's so different from so much of Nier that we've seen up to this point. Until somebody shows up and says, the wolves are coming. Remember the wolves in the desert? They're back.
They managed to get all the way through the sand river and then get to the festivity. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. They're here and they attack both Fira and the king, and we start a little fight here. Boy, I gotta tell you, fighting wolves is really annoying in this game. That's what I remember specifically about the wolves, is that they were kind of annoying to fight. I don't know if you had that experience, but I found them to be on the annoying side of enemies.
Yeah, how so?
They were very fast, and I feel like this game is, the way it handles is so deliberate. It is like very different from playing Nier Automata, which is obviously like a Platinum Games like action game that has, I feel like you have a lot more movement options, you have a lot more different ranges of options available and things like that. Whereas here I felt like trying to deal with a wolf was very, I don't know, it just felt different from fighting the Shades. I mean, it's supposed to feel different from fighting the Shades. You're fighting a different enemy type, but I remember not enjoying fighting wolves when I played Nier Replicant. I just had a very, the way that Nier feels about Shades, I feel about wolves.
Hold on. To go back to something that we'd moved on from, is Emil implied to have feelings for Father Nier too?
That's a great question. That's a really, really good question. I guess that would be true, theoretically.
So that, okay, because he said that the stuff that with that confirms that he specifically has feelings for Nier is in a book.
It's a grimoire Nier.
So, yeah. I guess like my new question is: does like the Nier canon, all the extended universe, does it assume Brother Nier is who we played as?
That's a great question, Ken.
I'm sort of, like, all my mind is just racing to all these other possibilities.
Ken, that's a wonderful question.
I don't know if you're saying that because you don't know, or if it factors into something that I don't know yet.
It's a really good question. It's great. A really good thought. You should chase that thought in your head and nowhere else.
Okay.
We'll talk at a later time. I will be, like, a little bit more transparent with you in that, like, yes, that is tied up in some things, but also, the answer, especially in the wake of Nier Replicant, like the remaster, is a little bit more ambiguous and a little bit more open to interpretation in a way that I would even have to check what I personally know about that, because I feel like it's a very nebulous answer. I'm sure someone listening to the pod right now is going, Eric, you moron. It's spelled out clearly here in this book, and to that I will tell you, I am illiterate. I don't know how to read. So But yes, there is, most importantly, there is like Grimoire Nier, which was a companion book slash art book, basically just like a guide to the game. That was, I feel like those are popular for RPGs, especially like Japanese developed RPGs. I actually have one on my shelf right now that a friend of the show, Alex Van Aken, brought me from Japan for Tactics Ogre that I love. It was very, very fun to read through. But there is one that is basically like both concept art and like various lore information called Grimoire Nier that had a revised edition released around the time that Nier Replicant version 1.22 came out. And I'm assuming that is where most of the confirmation comes from, but that it would also include like there was an interview in 2011 specifically. And Grimoire Nier was originally released back when this came out. So the revised edition was just a like new release, like a revision of it that also then came to the West, because I think the original one never came over to the West. I think it was only in Japan. Includes a lot of stuff in it that I don't know if we're going to really get to all of it just yet. Because, God, then we got to start talking about the stage plays and the additional content. I mean, we're probably not going to talk about Red and Black. We might talk about Red and Black. I don't know. We're not to that episode yet, so... I mean, shoot. Ken, we haven't talked about Drakengard yet, have we?
Oh, we did the very, very, very beginning.
How much did we talk about with Drakengard?
Oh, that whatever ending is that leads into this game.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so there's like all kinds of different stuff that can play really, really big roles or really small roles in the story, and I've kind of like left those to talk about when we get to them. But all that is to say, this... like Grimoire Nier and the Papanir stuff, right now I will tell you that the answer is probably yes. The answer that you are seeking is probably yes, but also it's complicated, and that's where I'll leave it.
Okay.
Yeah. Is your concern more that there are like two different versions of Nier and you're trying to figure out like if there's a canon one or not? Or are you trying to just figure out, like, does Emil have the hots for both Brother Nier and Papa Nier?
I mean, both questions, I guess.
Okay, yeah. So.
Just, like, the quantum state that the character of Nier exists in is, like, fascinating to me as something that, like, tries, or if the franchise does it to whatever degree, assume that only one or both of them exists. Like, I guess I'm just curious as to how it handles that, because... I have no recollection of the things that Automata says about this game and if they seemed to lean one way or another. And
that's good, because some of the things Automata says about this game would spoil massive parts of this game for you if you remember them. So I'm glad we're not covering that. So the thing I will say, again, it's not a huge spoiler. I'm simply saying that, like, this game will address it in content that we will get to, because you have to do it to get a weapon. I don't know if it's going to give you an entirely satisfactory answer. I think it's more just like a solution they had for a problem that was foisted onto them years ago. Because we talked about the original difference between Papa Nier and Brother Nier was basically the studio. It was like the publisher stepping in and saying, like, Western audiences are going to want to play as this grizzled dude and not like a boy. And so there was kind of a distinction then made, and that's how we ended up with the two versions of Nier that were released. And Nier Replicant obviously condenses them back down to just being Brother Nier as the main character that we have right now. But I will say that Papa Nier is addressed in this game, and they do kind of find a solution for that, as it were. Anyways, we are fighting wolves at some point, and halfway through the health bar, these wolves run off, and the king is holding Fira in a panic, is basically like, you know, freaking out, and she's like, calm down, the people are getting nervous, and she thanks him for making her his bride and goes limp. and our king is now furious about the life they should have had, the life they should have shared together, but the happiness they would have had, and then decides that he's not going to calm down. He's going to pick up his weapon and go kill some wolves. And Vice, very importantly, says, you're not going to win that battle. You're not going to kill these wolves. And going off without, like, protecting the city is not what Fira would have wanted. And we're going to come back to that later because we got to go do other pieces of this story. So we will come back to Facade, but that's kind of the note that we leave Facade on, because at that point we are kind of given free rein to then go do other open world stuff if we want, which is what we chose to do. But how do you feel kind of about Facade up to this point with this storyline?
So we talked a lot about how it has been one of like this, one of the only like bright spots in this world so far, and see it basically succumb to the same rot as everywhere else feels appropriate, but although we did like dip out for a bit to go do other things, so I'm at least like interested to see a lot of those changes happen in real time, because that was, again, like I've had issues with the time skip in a lot of ways so far in terms of feeling like it was necessary or earned. But part of the appeal of a time skip is that, like, you see how something has changed and then kind of, like, go back and see how it got there. And so Facade is, like, one of the only places we're kind of seeing it happen in real time.
Mm.
So I'm at the very least interested to see how it handles that, because I think it's one of the only places right now, and this might be me just assuming where this is going, it's one of the only places right now that we are here to intervene it getting to the same state as some of the other places have been. That's interesting. That's intriguing.
We'll learn more about it in next episode, because that will be part of our next episode alongside the airy content. But now we're heading back to the junkie, because we've got a village waiting for us, and a letter waiting for us at the village, saying that our good pal Gideon has a big-ass sword waiting for us, and he would really like us to avenge his brother by killing a robot and a shade for him. Basically, he says, you know, he's been running this shop, creating weapons ever since we last saw him. He doesn't care about money. He doesn't really care about the shop. He just wants to make weapons that can kill the shade and robot that killed his brother. So now we kind of know what has happened to those brothers. And Nier, of course, has got that bloodlust in him. He's got that dog in him and wants to go kill a shade. Perhaps, maybe, foreshadowing more revenge story. So we head into the junk heap. Boy, I tell you, the other thing I remember specifically about this section of Nier is that I could probably map the junk heap for you from memory. I think, for some reason, there are a lot of parts of Nier that you play multiple times, but for some reason, the junk heap always sticks out to me, because I feel like I was always running the same route through that place, especially like the minecart. The minecart section is just lodged in my brain firmly. At this point, you probably could map it by memory, right?
Yeah, part of that is because the game does not have, or at least not in this particular mission, does not have any kind of waypoint or direction to give you, so I ended up going through at least, I think, two floors, and basically having to cover every inch and make sure that I was not going, or that I did not miss the plot. So yeah, like, there's a lot of, there's something kind of respectable about the efficiency of getting a lot out of one space and not having to constantly, like, create new maps to do a thing. So, like, props to them on that for, well, you don't have to give me spoilers, but, like, are there going to be, like, new areas introduced in this game still? Have we kind of seen everything?
Oh, like new areas to explore? Yeah, there is at least one more major new area that we've not gotten to yet. I will say that's probably the only one. Mm-hmm. The rest of it is going to be very familiar ground to you. There's kind of like one other thing that we'll do that's kind of a dungeon. But I'm going to say that like most of this is going to be pretty familiar retreading to you, which, I mean, honestly, is like, it's kind of how Nier operates. Nier Automata is really the same way when you sit down and look at it. Like, you kind of have two major hub areas or like large scale, maybe three. And you kind of just move between different parts of them that unlock or change over time. I think Nier Automata is a little bit more it makes more efficient use of the space in terms of like finding ways to put new stuff in places that are old, if that makes sense. The junk heap in Nier Replicant is very much like the worst offender for me of we are just running the same content again. And I like it in some ways because it reinforces this very like you're in a factory. You're in like a building of production and right. like robots, which obviously like I feel like we've talked about it a little bit, but like the junk heap feels like a place at a time, right? Where it's like everything else is very fantasy and very, you know, we just came from Facade, which is very much like a fantasy town with like the things that they do, the tech that they have, the way they live. And then you go to the junk heap and you go into the mountain and it's like, oh, here's a bunch of robots and machinery and cogs and stuff like that. And as we're about to find out, like a robot that is actually now speaking to you and talking to you and saying things, which is jarring to say the least. So I do find that even when we retread some of the stuff, they do try to find ways to add just a wrinkle, just something different. So after we fight back through this whole area and we don't need to go beat by beat through it, we return to the junk heap. We jump down a hole and end up in an arena similar to where we fought that previous boss from pre-time skip. Now there's this giant robot there with a little gremlin shade, almost like the one that Sora turns into in Kingdom Hearts is what I always think of. but like a little shade hanging out on top. And we get into a boss
It's Ratatouille, fight. But with the robots in shade.
It's Ratatouille, yes. Yeah. We get to a boss fight, which I remember being a boss fight. Mm-hmm. I think this was like, oh, I'm fighting something that's, it's hustling, it's moving, it's got different moves. You gotta like dodge and stuff like that. Whereas that previous junk heap boss fight really felt like a Zelda boss, like a King Dodongo, or a Bongo Bongo or what have you. This boss, I'm not going to be like, oh, it felt Soulsy, but like you do have this boss that's like shooting and schmoving and moving around and even like getting wings and flying around and stuff like that. It felt much more active than a lot of the bosses we've had up to this point.
Yeah, but it still feels like they die fast. That's something that maybe that's because I had like a really powerful spear that I was using. It's like there are these phases that it has where it's, you know, it's sprouting shade wings and flying up and like dropping debris down on top of you, but all the like I guess it's doing so much damage to it, all those phases felt like they went through very quickly, and I don't really know if that's like a power scale problem in terms of like I bought a really powerful spear and it has put me ahead, because like I was even comparing the one that I had, like called the Phoenix Spear, compared to like every other weapon that I had that I'd been gathering through the game, and it was like twice as strong, and I was like, I don't know if I just bought the right thing at the right time at the right place or what, but it definitely felt like whatever challenge there was supposed to be here, I feel like I just kind of cut through it very fast.
That's fair. I also feel like, yeah, some of the purchased weapons, especially ones like the Phoenix Spear, that's like, I don't know if that's the best spear in the game, but it's definitely like one of the better ones. I remember using that for a while because I was a spear user primarily, and I remember that one doing some damage. Obviously, we collect all the weapons for the actual requirements, but on top of that, I would say that, like, the bosses are not meat spongy in this game, and I actually appreciate that, because that's actually a thing I would levy against Nier Automata as a criticism, is that some of those get a little meat spongy as they go on, as we'll get to. And I'm happy that in some ways like Nier Replicant bosses rarely felt like they overstayed their welcome. They were just the right length for having a boss fight while still having, like, you know, not just standing there just hitting things, although imagine you were doing probably a lot of like bullet shooting and stuff like that, and that helps with the damage output. I think something interesting that happens during this fight is obviously as we rough it up, the shade falls off its head and we can also fight the shade. And I think the ways that those characters kind of react to and interact with the fight as it goes on are kind of interesting. A little bit of Nier being like, hey, this is kind of strange. And then, obviously, we finally finish the fight. We deliver the final blow with a spell, as is custom. And the robot continues to be like, you know, I must protect as it dies out. And good old Gideon shows up and just starts kicking the shit out of this robot. And is clearly just having a normal one as he is, just really lost in his madness, huh? It's pretty sad to see. Even Nier's like, yo, that's a little bit much, dude, and walks out, and we get the hatred and madness will never heal a wounded heart. Maybe a little prescient for Nier in this moment. And we get a fragment, which we have not done in a while, actually, because of the ferryman stuff. That is not part of the fragment quests. So I feel like it's been a minute since we got a fragment. We get the Law of Robotics, which adds to our big mysterious key that we're trying to put together to go to the Shadow Lord's castle. If you forgot what the main plot of the game was pushing us towards. Any closing thoughts on the Law of Robotics here?
I mean, we did kind of gloss over in the midst of all of this, the robot is saying, and the robot in the shade is basically saying that they have to protect something. That they never actually get around to saying what the directive is. I don't know what it's protecting from us, but Kaine says something to the effect of, like, shades aren't supposed to have, like, coherent thoughts and aren't supposed to have feelings. Which, like, right. Again, like, it feels like that's something that they are now actually getting into. Especially, like, even with the stuff with the fucking shade that was in the ship. Clearly having some attachment to that to that man, and like dealing with the rejection of it all. Like, again, like I get the broad strokes of what this game is trying to do. I just feel like maybe it got in its own way very early on in terms of how it was going to present that idea, and maybe got like ahead of itself. So like a lot of those things are starting to become like feel more naturally woven into the things that we're doing, and we're gonna even get into that more a little bit in the Force of Myth as well. Yeah, broad strokes of this game are starting to click better than the minutiae is, maybe.
I think what's going to help with kind of your framing of this as we move forward is that Nier is, like, you know this from Automata, that Nier is a game about, like, setting up an expectation and then kind of twisting it later on. It loves its viewpoints. It loves its, information that you might not have had. That later informs something that you've already done or already seen. It loves to kind of have you do a thing and then be like, why did you do that thing? Not necessarily in a judgy way, but in a, like, you're doing something that might feel in character for your character, but now it might make you question why that character would do that thing. And so that's the note I'm going to, like, add to help you frame this, is that, like, it's Nier. We know there's gonna be a yes and to all this. And speaking of yes and, welcome to the Forest of Myth. We are back here because the text menu is gonna have us solve some text adventure puzzles again. The mayor says a strange presence at the Divine Tree, a legendary tree we didn't deal with last time we were here. Citizens aren't really supposed to go near the tree outside of their prayer routine. It's just how things have been. So we go up to the tree and it starts speaking with us. And we are the grass, the trees, the woods, the dark entity that governs all memories. May the words form themselves to your liking. And we zip right into a text adventure. We don't have to, like, specifically comb this apart. It's a lot of text. Again, I'm going to maintain a veil here, but I am going to say that, like, this one's a little bit more important than the last one. Mainly because I feel like there is more stuff happening that I feel like we are presently dealing with. Because as we delve through these memories, we learn that essentially this tree holds memories of people and likes to assign them emotions, things like envy. I think conviction is one of the ones that gets brought up at some point too. There's a lot of different emotions that kind of get assigned to these memories of the deceased that live within this tree. And a shade is in here eating the memories. And so there's, like, this very brutal part. And like, I say brutal, but we have it, like, written, like dictated to us. But I remember very specifically, there's a part where it describes Nier like slicing the Shade's belly and emotions spilling out. And that like image always sticks to me because the emotions are like jewels. And so there's like a depiction of Vice is like, what are you doing? And Nier's like, I'm trying to get rid of the Shade. And he like slices the belly and like jewels come spilling out like guts. And it's like very, very, I don't use this word lightly because you know how much I hate this word, but it's visceral. Like it's a moment where you're like, this is the moment for me where I'm like, oh, Nier does not give a shit. Nier does not think of these Shades as anything. Like honestly, he thinks of them probably lower than animals. Like he just sees them as things that he's not just going to eliminate. Like there's a passion for the act here that informs it. You know, you think of the way that this is going to get gruesome. I'm sorry for the squeamish folks at home, but like the way that someone might think about, like, I don't know, cracking an egg as they make an omelet, right? Like they think about that as a very like businessman, not businessman, but like, as a very like a routine thing. Like you're just cracking the egg and whisking it. It's part of everyday life if you make omelets all day. But for Nier, there is a clear like involvement he takes in the act of killing Shades. He chases it, he seeks it out, he wants to do it. And then when he does have the option to do it, he is not quick and clean about it all the time. He takes moments like this where you're like, damn, Nier. And so this was the moment where I was like, I was understanding Grimoire Vice a little bit more. I'm like, yeah, something's wrong with Nier. He's really in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as we start to kill the Shade, literally like pick it apart and return these jewels, the tree regains more and more of its memories that it had forgotten. And we start answering these questions, and it does the whole thing of remember this thing that we said in a previous text story. I think it's pretty generous about, like, if you get the answer wrong, it doesn't bump you back too far or anything like that. There's even a section where it specifically feels like it's getting a little bit barbed towards Nier as a person. But we finally surface, and Vice tells us that he didn't realize Shades were capable of rational thought, because as we learned, the Shade who was eating the memories was starting to show the beginnings of what I think the game describes as a soul, but basically like the Shade was acting human, was acting like someone who had, as Kaine just put it in the Law of Robotics, a direction, a directive, like a purpose. With the tree defeated, we don't have to worry about any more text adventures or anything like that, but Nier is very much like, whatever, like we get our shard as we would have it, and we just kind of go on with our lives because we're just like, whatever, man, I'm done with this. How did you feel about this section, Ken?
I think it was an effective way for them to convey some of the stuff that's happening in terms of Nier's psyche, because I think for as much as like everyone wants video games to be, you know, very reactive to how we play them, and like us in terms of like we execute an action to see something unfold, I do think maybe Nier as like this hack and slash game has an issue conveying the deeper meaning of combat encounters when it is largely hack and slash. Like everything kind of operates the same, so I think if you're trying to illustrate something, it can't always necessarily be within the same structures of how you just play it normally. I think if you want to illustrate that something is significant, then you need to make sure that it's portrayed differently than everything else that you've done. And I think having it be in those descriptions in the text adventures, is probably the more effective use of that in this game thus far. Although Vice says something about, like, we won't have to deal with the text adventures again because of figuring out the tree shit. Like, is that true? Is that the last time we'll do that?
No.
Okay. Well, then that was a weird thing for him to say.
But I'm also going to tell you... No, I'm not going to tell you anything.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. So yeah, at the very least, it felt like a more effective use of that. And it felt like intentional in a lot of ways in illustrating the stuff that they're trying to talk about in this section of the game.
Yeah, I'm looking back through some of the stuff. You did get a key fragment here, right? I'm trying to remember if...
Yeah.
Because there's an additional thing you can do here you can only do it once you have all five key fragments. You can basically come here and do something before you go use those key fragments. So you wouldn't have run into it yet. I might remind you to do that after the next episode to maybe run back and do that. Because you can also do it again later. But basically, like, you'll be able to access it after we've gotten the five key fragments. And I do think it's worth seeing. I think it's interesting. I think it might start to answer some questions for you. And that's why I want you to do it. Because I want to see your mind burr as you play it. I think, I can't remember, it might be new for replicants. I'm not 100% sure on that. I'm double checking it right now. I'm actually looking through the wiki right now to double check. Oh no, this was part of the original one as well. Okay, so it felt like it was conceptually newer, but it looks like it was in the original as well. I do think it would be worth going and doing this at some point. So
okay. I assume it's talking to that lady who keeps being like, "Oh, that doesn't make any sense. That like the key would exist for whatever her phrasing was." But I could show her like, "Hey, look, it's real."
She was a fortune teller.
Maybe
there's a fortune teller that you talk to once you have all the key fragments, basically. So yeah, we'll have you do that at some point.
Okay.
Anyways, yeah, I find that all the stuff about the Forest of Myth, the death dream as it's called, the sleep that everyone gets put into, and then ultimately the tree and all these text adventures are stuff that I think ends up being, again, like, to me right now, it percolates so much stuff. I'm just like, oh my god, I want to talk about so much stuff, but we can't talk about it just yet. So it's a little frustrating. But I do find it to be a very, very interesting swerve for the game to be like, you know, this is a game we've already seen kind of play with perspectives, play with genre ideas. You know, you go into Emile's mansion and it's like, okay, we're doing a spooky mansion in the game, and we're going to literally give you Resident Evil camera angles and make the mansion look like the Wesker mansion and all that. And then you go into the junk heap and you go into this top down like bullet hell shooter segment on the minecart. Like this game loves to play with ideas, genre ideas. And so to have them pivot so hard into like text adventure, I mean, like, basically Zork to some degree, and use that as a storytelling device is really interesting. And I think the first time around, it's just novel. The second time around is the one where I think it's more meaningful for us and our purposes, because we get to see the character moments that come from it. Mm-hmm. And it also feels much more directed towards, maybe not the player, but the player character. Like, the things that are happening to you, it's informing everything that's happening. And that's kind of the note I want to end on, is that, like, I think the game is starting to play its hand. It's being much more upfront about, like, these are the themes we are playing with, the ideas we want you thinking about, the stuff that is happening in this world that we think you should care about. Do you feel like that's happening? Do you feel like you're getting more of an idea of what Nier is doing now?
Yeah, at the very least, I have, like, some modicum of, like, things to hold on to that aren't me just being like, why the hell is this kid not age? Like, new actual, like, through lines of things, like, storylines to be invested in a way that doesn't feel just like I'm kind of getting, like, a tour of a world. And it feels like more I'm actually getting to know the people in it and where they might end up.
I think looking ahead to our next entry, which will be both Sacrifice, which is the key fragment that is held at the Airy, and then Loyal Cerberus, which is the key fragment that is involved with the facade, which we'll get into, probably be the first thing you do when you get back. I imagine we'll do that, and then we'll do Sacrifice, unless the game just kind of throws you for a loop. But either way, like, we do have, there's only two left, no more weirdness around how we tackle this stuff. I am very curious to pick these apart, because for me, I think of the stuff that happens in this section of the game, they are some of the more memorable moments of the game for me. Like, maybe the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. We'll see. Definitely, I know I've been hyping up to you personally. Like, I've been saying, like, Sacrifice is one of my favorite sections of Nier Replicant. I'm very excited for you to play it. But
yeah.
I'm very excited for you to get to this content. And for those listening at home, we'll have a guest. It's been a while, but we'll have the one, the only Jesse Vitelli on to guest. We're very excited about that. Jesse specifically highlighted this section as one that he wanted to talk about. We are more than happy to oblige and have him on. And then after that, we'll be full steam ahead to ending A. And that's all I'm going to say about that. We'll be tackling ending A of Nier Replicant after that. So we're almost at the end, Ken. Isn't that wild? Isn't that crazy?
That is wild and crazy.
God, if only more revelations awaited in the future to further complicate things. If only.
What a concept.
But in the meantime, as always, we are Norm DFM. We already shout out a lot of the stuff at the beginning of the show. If you want to go support us, we have the Patreon, patreon.com/normdfm. Ken and I both have our individual Twitter and Blue Sky, importantly, accounts. So at CMoosey and at ShepherdCDR on both platforms, I think, right? You kept ShepherdCDR when you swapped over. So yeah, we're easy to find there. We're trying to get more consistent. Darn it. I would like to get the next like two episodes just banged out real fast. Boom, boom. It's been too long. I've got the hunger, the fire in my heart right now for Nier, talk about Nier, say things about Nier on the internet. I think, Ken, you're starting to feel it a bit too. You got the fire. Hopefully it won't be a long wait between this and the next episode. Before this episode, for Ken, for myself, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Normandy FM.